Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a special debate with two of the biggest digital stars on the left and the right. On the left, we have Hasan Piker, who once was the youngest of the Young Turks. Now he's gone out on his own in terms of the streaming world at twitch.tv/HasanAbi. He's one of the biggest stars on Twitch. On the right, Michael Knowles of The Daily Wire, one of Ben Shapiro's proteges there, host of a podcast called The Verdict with Ted Cruz, one of the top podcasts in the whole country, also host of the Michael Knowles Show podcast. Both these guys meeting each other for the first time months back before coronavirus. We were trying to get them on the set together at the same time. We had scheduling problems with both of them, never could pull it off. Now we're finally pulling it off virtually. It's the first time they've interacted. They had a lot of things in common, but they really disagree politically. So here's the full debate, unedited, including a lot of stuff that we couldn't air on TV, but we wanted to present it as a special podcast, and we hope that you enjoy it. So here we go, Michael and Hasan.
Gentlemen, welcome. Hopefully we can keep it respectful and focus on the issues, not the personal stuff. All right, so.
That works for me. Nice to see you, Alex.
All right, let's start with the role of government. Hasan, in responding to coronavirus, should we be doing more in terms of government than we're doing right now? What do you see as the role of government right now?
I think that the government has fallen short in nearly every capacity. And then, of course, we need to be doing more. I don't even understand what we could potentially do less than what we have done thus far, whether it's a moratorium on rent or an abolition of rent for the time being, even that also accompanied potentially some moratoriums on mortgages as well, make it easier on the homeowners on top of everything else. And then beefing up our unemployment payment system would be an immediate necessity. And I feel like we have fallen short. We have 40 million or more than 30 million people unemployed in this country right now, with 1.5 million that filed for unemployment this past week. And there are a lot of people out there suffering currently. And I truly don't even know what we would do less than what we have done thus far.
I mean, Michael, there are a lot of people that have lost their jobs through no fault of their own, been sort of mandated to do that by the government. They can't pay the rent right now because they don't have income coming in. What do you say to this idea of a rent moratorium?
Well, I actually have to agree with Hasan that I think the government's handled this abysmally, although, as you might expect, for different reasons. It's true, people can't pay their rent. They can't pay their rent because they've been mandated not to go into work. The trouble is there actually isn't enough money to solve that. So we've now spent $6 trillion in the United States at the federal level to get us through 4 months of this virus. If my math is right, that means it would take us $18 trillion at least to get through just 1 year. And at the rate GDP is going, that would overwhelm even GDP. You could take all the money that we make in the United States, give it all for coronavirus relief, we still wouldn't have enough. The only way that we can possibly get out of this is to reopen the country. But unfortunately, this has become a political issue. Frankly, I think it's been a political issue from the very beginning. People have politicized it on both sides, but I think mostly on the left. And I think that we can expect to see some of the hysteria, which is not based on scientific studies, begin to ebb on November 4th if Joe Biden should be elected president. That's my prediction right here.
Hasan?
Obviously, I'm also in support of reopening the economy. I think every single sane person wants to at least go back to normalcy, if for no reason other than that. But the problem is reopening the economy safely. And unfortunately, on that metric, we have fallen short. Now, part of reopening the economy safely, especially in the early stages, was to mitigate and stop the spread of coronavirus so that we could potentially, in a safe capacity, reopen slowly but surely. We failed on that front. Our first wave of coronavirus never really stopped. We never were able to mitigate the first wave. And now we are seeing spikes as a consequence, as a direct consequence of reopening in an unsafe manner. So we are on the same team as far as wanting to reopen the economy. It's just the problem is there are a lot of actors, I guess, both on the left and right, but I believe predominantly on the right, that are making it harder for us to reopen by elongating the suffering by refusing them our masks, refusing the social distance, and turning it into a political culture war. I agree. This should not be a political issue. This is an issue of science. We should be listening to the scientific authorities on this. And I will admit, given the novelty of this virus, this disease, this pandemic, of course, scientists are sometimes going to be wrong. That doesn't mean we should throw it out in its entirety, and we should listen to them as new evidence presents itself. We should change our behavior. But currently, what we know is that masks and social distancing are effective, and that reopening the economy in an unsafe capacity, as admitted by Donald Trump, also is devastating the economy further and prolonging our reopening.
Michael, you've suggested that wearing masks has become a political issue. You've suggested that President Trump, by saying to wear masks, was conceding some sort of defeat. What do you say to people like Hassan who are saying the science on this is clear? I mean, even Ben Shapiro, your boss, has said wearing a mask in a crowd is a good idea.
Well, I would agree with Hassan and others that say that we have to listen to the science, and I would agree that the science is clear, but it doesn't say what political activists are saying that it says, even some on the right. I've got the CDC right here. Paper went up in the CDC May 2020. This was an analysis of randomized controlled trials. It showed that although mechanistic studies support the potential effect of hand hygiene or face masks, evidence from 14 randomized controlled trials of these measures did not support a substantial effect on transmission of viruses.
That was in May. Has it not been updated since then?
It hasn't been updated since then. And what we know is going back even further back than May, we saw Dr. Fauci tell us that wearing masks was more or less a social placebo. It actually didn't do very much. We saw the Surgeon General say the very same thing. We saw a number of politicians saying the very same thing. Now they've all switched. They've switched because it's become primarily a political symbol. And you see this with someone like Dr. Fauci, who throws out the first pitch at the Nationals game, and he's wearing a mask 60 feet away on the pitcher's mound. Then he's sitting 6 inches away from his friends in the stands, and he takes the mask off. You see this with Joe Biden wearing the mask dangling from his ear, not covering his mouth. It's not stopping any spread of viruses. It's just a political symbol. I do think the right has given in too much on that premise, and I don't think it's going to help us reopen more quickly. I think it will be used as a visual symbol to slow the reopening until after the election.
Hassan?
What do you have to say to numerous empirical studies that have been conducted that show the transmission rates decrease by up to 70% when people use masks and also social distance on top of that? Regardless, the CDC is far from the only authority on this matter. So I don't know why you would advocate for a now openly outdated CDC protocol and mention the Surgeon General and mention Anthony Fauci when Anthony Fauci has clarified his position. I mean, you understand that obviously science is subject to change. When new evidence presents itself, you change in accordance to that new evidence, right?
Well, I would agree that the Anthony Fauci has become the top public health expert in the country. The CDC is the public health organization in the country. But I don't see how and why they've changed their minds so much. And there's this credibility issue because they were emphatic. Anthony Fauci has been in his role for what now, over 40 years, and he's just learned in the last few weeks the basic efficacy of masks? I don't think so. I think it's obviously become a political matter. And we know Anthony Fauci's real position, which we saw just the other day at the baseball game, which is in his own private life, even when he's very close to people, he's taking the mask down to talk. I think actions speak a lot louder than political words on political talk shows.
So you've made the argument.
There are certain circumstances when you're home alone or whatnot that where you can take your mask off. I don't think anyone is saying that you have to wear a mask on all the time. That'd be a straw man. But what I'm failing to recognize here is that Anthony Fauci has corrected himself and said that the reason why he originally had said that masks are a social placebo for the most part is because they were worried about the lack of PPE in this country due to the unfortunately fragile supply chain that we have with our over-reliance on manufacturing, specifically in China. Unfortunately, the number one country in the world, the wealthiest nation on the planet, was not able to provide proper masks in a timely capacity to our healthcare experts at the time that desperately needed it. This was one immediate measure that he took. Albeit it was a wrong one, I think, in my mind, and it probably escalated the spread and it made it worse. But I don't believe that you think that we should be beholden to whatever our positions were in the past, especially when new evidence presents itself, right? I don't think that we choose to believe Anthony Fauci from 3 months ago and not Anthony Fauci now, which I find to be rather suspicious, unless there's a political motivation behind it, like you said.
No, the issue that you've, it's actually, you make a very apt point here, which is you're saying the reason that Fauci and other people said what they said about the masks was basically they were lying to us to preserve the masks for the healthcare workers and not, you know, the rest of us peasants out here where it doesn't matter if we get the virus. The issue is the credibility. If he lied to us then, how can we possibly trust him now? And you're saying Anthony Fauci changed his position, but he clearly didn't, because even though he may say that he changed his position, just the other day he was photographed when he thought no one was looking, sitting very closely next to people, not wearing the mask.
So are you going to base an entire public health policy based off of one photo in one moment and negate sort of everything else that's been said? I mean, the head of the CDC said, if you wear your mask, 90% of the country wears its mask, we can get this thing under control in 6 to 8 weeks. Do you think that was a political statement and that was BS?
I think it's become highly politicized. It's not just one photo. There have been multiple photos of these public health experts doing this very same thing. Obviously, we have the point from the CDC website, but then further, the public health establishment, you had a letter, an open letter signed by over 1,000 so-called public health officials during the BLM protests and riots, saying that the virus would spread during right-wing protests, but not spread during left-wing protests. It was so transparent. I think many people are trying to memory hole that particular letter, but what it's shown is, I'm not making one point either way on the map. I'm saying the people who are telling us to wear the masks, the so-called experts we say we defer to, have no credibility left.
So do you wear a mask when you're out in a crowd?
I wear a mask if I am going into a restaurant or a house and someone, a friend or a relative, asks me to. I'll do it to be polite. Or if I'm mandated to go pick up my Chinese food for dinner. But when I'm walking around the streets or walking around the city, I certainly do not. I like the sunshine and I like the fresh air. And I've been just fine so far.
Okay. Obviously, your personal anecdotes of mask wearing would not substitute for empirical evidence, which you are avoiding and only hyper focusing on one CDC letter from 3 months ago. Once again,
it's a paper that just came out, as opposed to
the worldwide scientific consensus at this stage about mask wearing and its efficacy, which we don't even need to talk about. And I will address the BLM point of view if you would like to, but that's not the conversation we're having. The conversation we're currently having is about, again, the efficiency of masks and how helpful they are in stopping the further spread of coronavirus. Now, having said that, obviously, people are not expected to wear masks in every single condition, and no one, and I mean absolutely no one, is trying to hold others to account in that situation either. When you're out in public and you're surrounded by other people, wearing a mask, considering that this is an asymptomatic spreader, is the best possible way to eliminate the spread. You're not going to completely eliminate it. No one is saying that either. But that's the best possible way to go about it. And virtually every single data on the subject is on my side. So I don't know why you keep pointing out this CDC report from 3 months ago at this point.
All right, Hassan, let's go.
I'm told that we have to defer to the health experts. All right, That's why I keep pointing to them.
Let's go to a different part of this conversation, which is President Trump changing his approach some this week. We see him back giving briefings once again, talking about how people should wear masks, canceling the Republican convention in Florida, supposed to do the big rally there. Hassan, what do you make of the president's approach so far? Michael says that the president needs to do more to showcase him as the sort of decider on all this. What do you think?
I think that the president has been disastrous. It's not only a failure on his part for failing to even have the convention now, because the Jacksonville convention, as you mentioned, is no longer taking place, because Jacksonville officials themselves and numerous other Republican party members decided that they did not want to risk their lives for this political stunt, pretty much. And I'm glad that Trump finally decided to not hold the convention at all. Thank God. But I do find it ironic that, once again, Trump is no longer holding this convention in Jacksonville. He's no longer holding a convention in general because of the public hazard and the threat to the people's safety that would attend it, while simultaneously talking about having a full reopening of schools across the country. Barron Trump, Trump's son, is not even going to be going to school, as we found out. The St. Episcopal School in Maryland that Barron Trump attends is not even fully reopening or is not going to have, it's like Barron Trump, Donald Trump's son, not attend school in person. So it's, again, another instance where the elites get to do whatever they want. It's freedom and safety and security for me, but not for thee. Kind of like the mail-in ballot conversation. Trump gets to vote his mail-in, but no one else. If someone else wants to mail in their vote because of their very honest fears about not contracting coronavirus while exercising their civic duties, well, then it's actually bad. Right. But when Trump does it and his entire administration does it, then it's good. Makes no sense.
Michael, how do you think that the president is doing on this?
I think he's finally starting to get his groove back. I like that he's starting these press briefings again, because it seems that the Democratic Party would like to hide their nominee away because he's such a gaffe machine and he seems to be showing signs of decline. So they want to hide away for the campaign. I assume they are not going to want to do debates. They're already signaling that. So I like that he's holding the briefings. And I like that he's pushing forward on the schools. I mean, to counter Hassan's point over here, I like to defer to the science, as we all keep saying. And over the past few weeks, there have been studies in Finland and Sweden, which famously did not lockdown over the spread of the virus and following contact tracers in those two countries. It showed that the virus did not spread among the children. It did not spread to teachers or to the family members of those children. The other issue here, looking at the science, is that Dr. Fauci says we might get a vaccine soon, but it'll only be 70% effective, maybe, if we're lucky. And there will be a number of people, obviously, who are not going to take that vaccine, who don't take many vaccines. So according to Dr. Fauci himself, we are not going to get herd immunity, which means we are going to have to live through this virus, which fortunately has at least a 99.7% survival rate. But it would appear that right now the only way out is through, and the only thing we're doing by remaining so closed down is harming children's education and harming all of our livelihoods.
What do you make of Hassan's point that it's hypocritical? Should the president send his kid to a public school that's open?
Well, Barack Obama obviously didn't send his kids to public school, and very, very few presidents send their kids to public schools, particularly in Washington, D.C. I'm all for homeschooling. I'm all for cracking the government's stranglehold on public education. But I don't think it's hypocritical at all. And I think it actually shows the failures of public education that even people such as Mr. Trump's predecessor, Barack Obama, while touting the benefits of public education, would send his kids to private school.
All right. Well, we're going to have to take a break. Okay, go ahead, real quickly.
Well, what I find interesting about that take is that you hide the admission that the private school that definitely cares about their wealthy kids that go to that school is taking the necessary precautions and refusing to reopen in the way that Donald Trump wants. So I guess we do agree. Sometimes private schools can take measures that are more successful. Maybe the government should do the exact same for the millions of kids that have to go back to school, public school, in unsafe conditions.
All right. Let's pause for there. Let's take a deep breath. When we come back, okay, we're going to talk about the federal agents in the streets of Portland. Is this a good or bad thing? And could we be seeing something like that here in California soon? Stay with us.
He's a mayor.
So that was the moment when the mayor of Portland was hit by tear gas in the middle of his city. Federal agents moved in, even though local officials didn't ask them to. President Trump has suggested there could be similar actions in other cities coming, including a city here in California.
And all of these, Oakland is a mess. We're not going to let this happen in our country.
So back with our panel now, Hassan Piker on the left, Michael Knowles on the right. Michael, you usually advocate for states' rights. Do you like federal troops in the streets of Portland? Do you think that something like this is necessary maybe in a place like Oakland?
But to put down an insurrection, absolutely, we do need to get federal officials here. I mean, this is part of what the DHS was founded to do, was to protect federal property, and they were assailing this federal courthouse. But also, our very Constitution is sort of based on this kind of thing. You know, this goes all the way back to 1787, Shays' Rebellion. Criticism of the Articles of Confederation is that they didn't give the federal government sufficient power to put down an insurgency. That is in large part why we got the Constitutional Convention. This is very much in keeping with American politics and American history, and I hope that we can put down the insurgency and restore some order on our streets.
If you were playing the drinking game for the issue is, and you had Shays' Rebellion, take a shot now. Hassan, let's go to you. Your response to this, these scenes.
Oh, I think this is horrific. The idea that we have unmarked paramilitary troops at the federal level violating the Constitution and also violating our rule of law that is supposed to protect citizens, especially in a circumstance where they are exercising their First Amendment rights, is disgusting, but also expected from the Trump administration. I think Trump is scrambling to win as many people as he possibly can because everyone is hyper-focused currently on the ongoing devastating pandemic, which has taken more than 130,000 lives. So what he is trying to do in an effort to capture his withering base of support is to put down the boot of law, I guess, to enforce this law and order on largely Democratic cities. It's a purely political spectacle. It has devastating, absolutely devastating precedents that it's setting. And I am shocked that libertarians who stand proudly against tyranny are not out in the streets also protesting alongside the moms and leaving it up to the moms and dads of Portland to push back against government, tyrannical government overreach in the form of a police state.
Well, it should go without saying, just one point on this, Alex. It should go without saying that burning down federal courthouses is not a legitimate exercise of one's First Amendment rights. But I would like to correct one thing that Hassan said here, which is that the troops are unmarked. The federal officials are unmarked. That is not true. They're wearing uniforms. The uniforms clearly say what agency they're a part of. And actually, the uniforms identify the agent numbers right above the label that says DHS. So they are very well labeled. And it would be I know that sometimes the Antifa troops are also wearing uniforms, but I think it's pretty clear who's working for DHS.
I think that we've seen enough, and not only that, but there's literal legislation being pushed forward in Congress currently to make sure that there's actual patches. As a matter of fact, police routinely hide their badge numbers and identifiers when they're working inside of their own local jurisdictions. But to see federal agents originally go in this way, like they did in Washington, D.C., and now in Portland and potentially in Chicago as well, is truly devastating. Just like you mentioned, there is absolutely no way to tell between a federal agent and a boogaloo boy, for example, or an alt-right agitator like the ones we saw doing these demonstrations, reopening the economy demonstrations all around the country. So it is understandable that someone who would want to potentially exercise their Second Amendment rights and also on top of that defend themselves to potentially get into a very violent altercation with federal agents, which would be devastating and also terrifying. I would love to avoid that. One good way to do that is to leave it up to the local jurisdictions to deal with the demonstrators. The outside agitators in almost every single one of these circumstances is not the anti-fascists, but the cops themselves. They have all of the power to deal with a, in your words, a violent rebellion, I guess. But in most circumstances, they agitate, they escalate, and now they have gone so far as to literally kidnap people against the wishes not only of the citizens themselves, but even the governor or even the mayor, who is also the police commissioner, Ted Wheeler, in Portland. This is awful. So much for states' rights, I guess,
Hassan,
for a tyrannical government.
In some of the cities, there are some real public safety challenges, like a city like Chicago, where we have seen, you know, a devastating amount of murders in recent weeks and in recent years. What do you say to people who say the local officials just aren't getting it done and it's not safe for people, so they need some help?
Ironically, the activists themselves that march on the streets against police brutality are the exact same activists that are also marching and trying to actively stop violence happening in their streets. But what we know is that over-policing is not stopping the problem. We need to look at the root causes of crime, specifically violent crime, and eliminate that. Obviously, no one wants crime to occur in streets. Obviously, the people that live in these communities certainly don't want it to happen, which is precisely why we need to look at the socioeconomic factors that play a significant role in the development of crime when people have no other option, when they feel like there is nothing else to do, when there's no upward social mobility, when the American dream cannot be realized by every single person because we've never reached equality of opportunity, not equality of outcome, equality of opportunity. They find themselves at the precipice of crime. There's also empirical evidence and numerous studies reaching all the way back, even is even before a time when political theory was a conversation, all the way back to ancient Greece, if you would want to go that far, that shows that crime has a direct relationship with poverty. Solve poverty, you solve crime.
I love that we've gotten ancient Greece and the Shays Rebellion into this show. Michael, I'm sure you've got a lot to say in response.
I always have a lot to say, Alex, but I would like to correct one bit of nomenclature here. When a law enforcement officer takes somebody into custody, that's not a kidnapping, that is an arrest, which is the most basic function of law enforcement. And I think on a broader point, it's worth noting that you judge the tree by its fruit. We've now had these riots for the past, month or month and a half? And so far, at least 25 people have been killed in those riots, not by the police. That is a number that is much higher than the number of unarmed black men who were killed by police officers during the entirety of 2019, which is ostensibly what kicked off all of the riots. So I think when we look around at the chaos on our streets, even over the past few weeks, we cannot tolerate this forever. The reason we have a civil authority is to maintain the peace, to maintain order, to secure our possessions, and more importantly, to secure our life. And if local officials are not going to do that, then it is absolutely the role of the state or ultimately the federal government.
Last word on this topic to you,
sir. Do you think a police officer that is not even wearing their actual regular gear could go to a different jurisdiction while hiding any sort of significant identifier that they're a police officer and be able to detain someone without even telling them that they're a police officer? No, that would be considered a kidnapping because it's outside of the jurisdiction, which is outside of their scope of power. If you are a federal agent and you are tasked with protecting, let's say, a federal building, like you mentioned, you are not allowed to leave the federal building and go a street over, a block down, and kidnap someone.
In the DHS.
No, you absolutely are not.
You are.
Absolutely
you are, in fact.
Allowed to do that. As a matter of fact, so not allowed to do that, that Larry Krasner, the DA in Philadelphia, has threatened to sue any federal authorities that work in these localities without cooperation from the local police force, which at this stage in Portland, these officers do not have that jurisdiction. They do not have that authority to work outside of the immediate vicinity of the federal courthouse that they are supposedly protecting. Not only that, but there was another point that you mentioned beforehand about the deaths, the unarmed deaths of African Americans in the hands of police force. That is only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to police brutality or white supremacy in our criminal justice system. It is shocking to only talk about the 19 people that died in the hands of the police that were unarmed as though that's acceptable. Other countries have been able to lower that number.
Number is 14, but close.
Okay, sorry, not 19, 14. Regardless, again, other countries have been able to lower that number to zero. But not only that, but that is, like I mentioned, only the tip of the iceberg. What people like yourself who want to change the conversation to a smaller number like to talk about, but it's actually the escalation, the use of force in routine traffic stops. It's a multitude of different factors. I believe if you were to actually listen to any number of the Black Lives Matter protesters out on the streets, instead of talking about them like they are an autonomous, monolithic group of violent criminals, you would probably understand what they are criticizing, and I think that they are right.
All right. Well, we could do an hour discussion just on that, but we're trying to get a lot of other topics in too. So let's take a moment to briefly talk about the election itself. We've talked with both of you guys over the years about where things are going. A lot has changed since both of you have been on last time. Biden-Trump race, Michael, where do you see it right now? Who do you think is the front runner?
I think if the election were held today, I actually would put my money on President Trump's reelection, but only just barely. And by the way, there's still a long time until the election, so anything can happen. I think the social stigma of supporting the president right now, as we've got riots and statue toppling in the streets, is such that people are playing it even closer to the chest than they did in 2016. So I do think right now, if things proceed as they are, Joe Biden is going to have a huge advantage because there's no campaign and they're already trying to cancel the debates. So President Trump needs to do something. He needs to kick off the campaign. He needs to get out there. He needs to have rallies, by the way. But at the very least, he should continue the press briefings.
Hassan.
I love it. I think that Joe Biden is a very weak candidate. I said last time that I would be living in an anarcho-primitivist commune if Joe Biden became our candidate with the most devastating outcome out of that. out of that primary process. However, having said that, the greatest person that will allow Joe Biden to get elected in this circumstance is Donald Trump. So keep up those rallies. Keep up the police brutality as a consequence of police brutality protests that are happening all around the country. Keep, I guess, failing in the coronavirus prevention, which actually, on second thought, it's probably not good that that's happening, considering the fact that there is widespread economic devastation, regardless of what the market forces show, and also numerous people, countless people dying when they should not have died. He has blood on his hands. So, you know, it's currently Joe Biden's race to lose, and he can, because I believe that sometimes his cognitive functioning is very openly declining in public. However, having said that, Donald Trump is so bad that he has lost the incumbent's advantage, and the polls reflect that. And yeah, it looks like, I hope, Joe Biden is going to defeat Donald Trump in November, so, unless he does something truly disastrous. Joe Biden, that is.
The biggest decision Joe Biden has left for this campaign is who he's going to pick for vice president. There's a lot of talk recently about two Californians, Congresswoman Karen Bass, Senator Kamala Harris, who've both been on this show. Hassan, who do you think? Who should he pick for vice president?
I don't care. I truly don't care. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. I think at this stage, unless it's someone like Donald Trump, who at least on certain issues will stray away from the establishment Republican point of view, unless it's someone like Bernie Sanders who would stray away from the establishment Democratic point of view, most of these officials are going to do exactly what is best for their whichever industry is backing them on the Republican side and also on the Democratic side, certainly. And Donald Trump has done this with the tax cuts and deregulation over and over again. That's going to hurt more people in the long run. And it doesn't really matter who the vice president is in this circumstance. But I guess if I were to say, if you want to solidify a victory, a historic victory over Donald Trump, then Michelle Obama. I think that'd be an interesting one. Why not? Who cares?
Michael?
I want Biden to pick Hassan. I think Hassan, age requirements notwithstanding, would be a great pick. And I mean that actually somewhat sincerely, because I think you, Hassan, are speaking much more to young left-wing voters than the Democratic Party is and that many of the established politicians are. I think you are saying what they believe in their heart of hearts. And I think you and many others who are a little bit more to the left or a lot more to the left of the current Democratic Party are actually where the future of that party is. And obviously, I'm sorry to say, I would not be voting for the ticket of you and Mr. Biden, but I think it would be much more honest than the Democrats who are trying to hide what they believe.
I wish the Democrats were, I guess, as radical as you think they are, or at least listen to their base of support. So we are in agreement there. I wish that they were more radical. You know, radical things like Medicare for all, or radical things like beefing up Social Security. You know, any number of different radical proposals like that that would drastically improve the living conditions of the working class in this country. But the Democrats, unfortunately, do not care about that. I think they made that very clear when they focused all their efforts into ensuring that Joe Biden is the president. But anyone who tries to make the argument that Joe Biden is radical himself or even pushed or influenced by radical forces, I think is probably trying very desperately to win. And that's a last-ditch effort, a Hail Mary, if you will. And I'm, of course, referencing Donald Trump and the many times that he's tried to say that Joe Biden, one of the more conservative Democrats historically, a Democrat whose comprehensive criminal justice proposals were too overreaching for the likes of Ronald Reagan, is now being considered a radical actor, or rather influenced by radical actors in this Democratic Party. I wish that was true.
Biden's campaign did just put out a $10 trillion spending plan. So I think, Hassan, you're having more success on the party than you think. But I agree. To have more of a fair fight, more of an honest fight, we need the Biden Piker ticket, 2020.
Yeah. $705 billion to the military is never regarded as a spending plan. However, the radical Democrats in that circumstance wanted to take at least 10% of that budget and reappropriate it to social safety nets at a time of need like this. Yeah. And those radical Democrats, like you mentioned, almost unanimously voted with the Republicans. Again, both parties love to spend. It's just about where you spend that money. And unfortunately, in this country, we don't like to spend money on social safety nets. It's never enough. So, we never have enough money when it comes to helping the American working class.
And just to wrap things up, Hassan, I will take Michael's tongue-in-cheek endorsement of you as vice president as his compliment of you. Do you have a compliment of Michael in the feeling of good feelings and showing bipartisanship and reaching out to each other?
Michael is a great studio. I wish I could put
it
out.
It is a nice setup. So props to the Daily Wire team for that. Thank you both for coming on, having a respectful debate of ideas. I think it's important for people on both sides to hear the other side. And you both have great audiences in that sense, and I think are articulate, smart guys. And we appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Our thanks to Hassan Piker and Michael Knowles. This week, we also recorded an interview with Congressman Adam Schiff, where we talked about coronavirus relief, China, Russia, TikTok, and more. Download that in this space as well. We hope you'll let people know about our podcast, and we hope you follow me in social media at Alex Michelson with an E, and give me your thoughts on what you think about the show. And please share it out and rate it. Let people know about us. We're sort of a little engine that could operation with like no staff. And the more people that you let know, the more that we can do. Thanks so much for listening. See you next week for more of The Issue Is.